This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 4, Episode 9. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
020-88-167-691.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name is David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway and Berners. Well, welcome to the show, everyone. I'm fired up. I've been listening to the latest Van Halen album, so I'm ready to rock.
Drums are kicking.
Yeah, guitars, drums. I'm fully rocking out.
You've got a set of leather trousers on?
No.
Crikey, are they still producing albums? That's a great effort.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's still going. Yeah. And there's no letting up. It's just because he's getting on a bit, there's no letting up on the rock.
I am a fan of Van Halen. I wasn't aware that they were still operating, so it's a great effort.
Yeah, well, yeah, get yourself a latest copy of that album. It's got a picture of a train on the front. It's full on rock. But we're not here to talk about music. We're here to talk about cricket. And, of course, one of the ways that has traditionally been a way for people to get into playing cricket at a high level has been university cricket, and that's been the same all over the world. And the university cricket structure in India has fallen a little bit onto weaker times recently, but the BCCI are trying to do something about that. I noticed an article this week, there's a new 2020 tournament started. Have you seen that, Gareth?
I have, yeah. I was very interested in it, having just been out to India, and also having looked at our own university structure, that obviously a lot of the players at Millfield then go into play in the UK as well.
Mm. How do you see this new structure, 2020 tournament, fitting in with the university structure? Is it a positive move for Indian cricket?
I think it is. I mean, you know, anything 2020 gets a good gig over there, and we'll get good exposure, and that can only be good for the game. The quality of cricket just needs to be looked at, because in India, obviously, there's so many people and there's so many universities that there can be a bit of a dilution of quality. And that's the same within all of their trophies that they have over there and all of the levels that they play at. There's so many people that sometimes, you know, people can get mixed up in the wrong quality of cricket to develop their game. So as long as they go with, you know, eight teams or something manageable like that, then the quality will be ensured. And if that's the case, then I can only see it being a good thing for the player development pathway in India.
It's almost like, Berners, isn't it? It's almost like there's competition for talented players in India, in that they've got a number of different routes that they can take. They can go through the under-19 system or whatever. So, you know, it can be detrimental to any one path if there's lots of different options for players.
Yeah, absolutely. Gives them a few different gateways. They're hoping to spread a wide net, aren't they, I think, and give everyone an opportunity.
Yeah, that's true. And what about in the UK, Gareth? Where do you see university cricket fitting into the structure in the UK?
Yeah, it is a bit more formalised, and it's evolved, actually, because a number of years ago, it was seen as the way of getting talented cricketers into the first-class game. But with a number of different initiatives that have happened within England, one being the county academies, which now are a direct feeder into their own counties, obviously, but also the performance-related fees that the ECB give to each county, which is based on the number of young players that you have, the number of English qualified players that you have playing in the first class game. That's put a lot of pressure on counties to actually get the numbers coming through from the academies earlier into their first class teams. Mm. And with that, there's probably less instance of the best players going off to the MCCUs, or, you know, the Marylebone Cricket Club's university programme, which is the universities that sit at Durham, Cambridge, Oxford, Leeds, Met, Cardiff, and Loughborough. So there's less transition of players, I'd say, the quality players going into those environments presently than there would have been 10 years ago because of a shift in the county approach.
It's a sign of specialisation as well, isn't it? In, you know, in, it's the same in lots of countries. It's the same in India, same in England. It's a sign of people becoming very specialist very quickly, whereas perhaps in days gone by, you would see yourself as going to get a degree and to play cricket. But now you think to yourself, well, I've got to get into the academy system as quickly as possible, the get to playing regional level under 19s as quickly as possible, and specialise in cricket as quickly as possible, and not necessarily think about the more rounded education that you get within a university system.
And you're absolutely right there, mate. You know, that is definitely happening. It's great that the university program is still there, particularly in the UK. It's an established and structured level of cricket, which they play first class cricket against the first class teams at the beginning of the year as preparation for the year. They have some good tournaments themselves, and it would be wrong of us to think that every single player would come directly from the academy route into the first class squads. There has to be a mop up mechanism. There has to be an opportunity for somebody to pursue other vocations and other studies and still play first class cricket. And that's why it's really important that we retain that level of the game. There were a lot of calls last year after a couple of low scores to get rid of it, but I think that would be detrimental to the English game if we did that.
I've got a funny story from when I was in, sorry, go on.
No, go on, I want to hear the funny story.
I was involved with Cardiff, like the second year I got in the academy there with Kevin Lyons. We all traipsed off to Gloucestershire. We took all 15 of us for the experience of playing against a first-class county. They had about one first team, a second team, a load of academy boys, and I was named as about player number 20 on the team sheet. I think there was only about 16 of us in the party. And Gloucester have come in our changing room and said, one of the lads has broken down or something on his way to the ground. We need one of your fellas to come and field for us. So they shakes off into the Gloucester dressing room. They arm me up with a bit of Gloucester kit because there's a few of the sponsors there and whatnot, so they want all the emblems out and about. And they park me off down to Fine Leg, where a couple of my mates who are in Bristol have come to watch for the day. And to a very embarrassing point, a couple of young lads, probably aged around 8 or 9 years old, have come. They want a little signature from old Fine Leg, whilst my mates are jeering them from the sideline, saying, "He's not very good. He's not even in the Cardiff team," to which they were appalled and didn't want my autograph anymore. Probably the biggest highlight of my cricketing career, that moment just there, and it got diminished into nothing.
Well, of course, it's all different now, isn't it, Bernard? We get probably 100 requests a week for an autograph now from the ladies who listen to this show.
Wow, yeah. Signing all sorts of pieces of underwear every week.
Well, on that bombshell, let's move on into the yes, no round. And of course, the yes, no round is the chance for Gareth and I to answer three questions. But the only problem is we can only answer yes or no to the particular question that Bernard's asked us. So you've got the questions there this week. Fire away.
The first question. It's right to make a delivery strike dislodging of bells into a no ball?
No.
Yes.
Second question. Brett Leash shows that reputation is as important as ability for IPL coaches.
Yes.
Yes.
Third question, entertainment is as important as results.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, it's time for us to delve into the mailbag. Of course, every week we answer a couple of questions, and the best question of the week wins a prize, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So a couple of people have sent in their questions this week. Berners has picked out two of them. And what's the first question for this week?
Well, firstly, the Wolfman is back. I think he's appeared before on the show.
We love
he has.
So he's new season approach. The crew offer his equipment, all different shapes, sizes and styles. Obviously, things like the mongoose available these days. And he's just asking for a bit of advice regarding new batteries. Seen one particular manufacturer's website which actually have a bat selector, so it asks about your physical attribute, batting position, your batting style, technique, and obviously how all these things can contribute to finding the ideal blade. So what's your ideal weapon of mass destruction?
It's not a great line to you today, Bernard, so if anyone's not sure about that question, it was just about what you think about when you're buying a new bat. I would say that a lot of what you see when it comes to manufacturers' websites is marketing. You know, they're looking for a way to distinguish bat A from bat B from bat C, and manufacturer A from manufacturer B from manufacturer C. So you always have to take what the manufacturers say with quite a pinch of salt, especially when they go into as much detail as saying things about where you are in the batting order and your technique and the type of wickets you play on. There is some variation, but if you're a decent player with a decent bat, then all those little tiny things aren't going to make a huge amount of difference. I mean, if the sweet spot is high, that's a classic one. If the sweet spot is high compared to the sweet spot being low, and you play on a wicket where the bounce is lower, and you've got the wrong type of bat according to the manufacturer, if you're a good batsman, it's not going to cause you any problems. So I would say really that there's just some key things that you want to look out for, and you take everything else with a pinch of salt.
Yeah, I wouldn't buy a bat off the internet. I'll be brutally honest with you. Because, and this is my preference. You know, I'm not saying this is for everybody at all, but the way that I've always chosen bats, whether I was sponsored or not, and most of the time, fortunately, I have been sponsored. So I've been able to go along to places and just pick up bats. And I've often found that the stickers that are on the bat didn't necessarily correlate, or the good, you know, the limited editions or whatever the case may be, didn't correlate with what I was feeling when I was picking them up. And I would say three of the best bats that I've ever had, and I've had quite a few over the years, have been ones that have come a range down in their list of pricing. You know, whether it be with my sponsors at Hunts County, who I started with many years ago, or my present sponsors, which are SS Ton. So I just pick bats up, and I find the ones that I really like to pick up, and then I hit a few balls with them, and you know, get the old bat mallet out and just get a bit of an idea of where the middle is and how it sounds like. So I think it's a very personal thing for me. And I very much want to connect with the bat and get a good feel for it. And I've often found that if I was in a place where somebody had sent me through a bat, that it didn't quite sit with me, and I'd look to offload it rather than use it. So yeah, I think you need to connect with your bat, get a feel for it, and then ping a few balls around with it.
It is very personal. I remember I went to Grey Nichols a few years ago to see them making some bats, and I talked to their main guy there who makes the bats for some of the top name Grey Nichols guys, and he says some players he makes a bat and or a number of bats, and the guy will come in you know, this is top international player, he'll pick it up and go, yeah, that's great, finish it off, and off he'll go, and that'll be that. And then there'll be other guys who are constantly coming back and saying, oh, just shave off a little bit here and quarter of an ounce there, and oh, the pickup's not quite right, and you can do something with the handle, and it, you know, they're very, very, very pernickety. So it is very personal, and because the bat is so important to a batsman, you know, it's the tool, isn't it, of your trade, you've got to do what you feel is personal. And I agree with you, Gareth. I don't understand this thing about people buying bats off the internet. I did the captain at my club, he tells me the best bat he ever bought was one that he bought from a guy who had come over from Pakistan for work, and he happened to live near a factory where they make cricket bats. He brought a load of cricket bats over with him from Pakistan, and I don't know what it was destined to be, but it didn't have any labels or anything on it. And he bought it for 40 quid. And it's the best bat he ever had, he said. So, you know, it's nothing to do with price, and it's nothing to do with the quality that the manufacturer says it is, within reason anyway. You know, it is one of those things where I feel you've got to pick it up and give it a go. Otherwise, it's a bit of a lottery.
Having spent a lot of time in Pakistan and India, I can assure you that 90% of the bats that are made in this whole world are made in the same place and all come from the same willow distributor in the UK. Yeah. So it is a total, you know, gimmick. It's all about, okay, they change the profile, and they're probably getting different cuts, i.e. grain, but they are actually all made and manufactured under the same roof. So it's a production line for the various different brands and manufacturers, and then shipped and sold, you know, independently around the world. So it is a total nonsense. Pick the bloody thing up. If it feels good and you think it looks like a half decent plank, normally with straight grain, and about 9 or 10 grains, it's probably going to go all right.
Yeah,
you're not far wrong on that, mate. You know, and in terms of grains, I've had an absolute gun of about that. I had about 6 on it. So again, you know, just try things out, and you're right. They all come from the same sort of places, and it's marketing. So the more bats you can get in your hands, the better the decision you're generally going to make.
Yeah, and there are places, aren't there, that you can go and you can try the bats out. They've got a net out the back of the shop. And you can literally go and hit a few balls and try a couple of bats and see which one is best for you. And I think that's the proof. When it boils down to it, you have to have faith in that bat when you're out in the middle. And the only way you're going to do that is to compile as much information about how it feels before you buy it.
I'll tell you what's also useful, being able to use it.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's what it boils down to, isn't it? I mean, if you're a great batsman and someone gives you a plank, you're still probably going to do all right. Don't worry about it too much either. You can easily get sucked in. So yeah, I guess what we're saying is give it a go. Just buy something that feels right and then get on with learning how to use it.
Okay, next question is in from Gurpreet. He's a 16-year-old right-handed middle order batsman, and he's saying he's got a problem with his back lift. He thinks his back lift is too high and he cannot bring his bat down quick enough, so digging out those fateful Yorkers. He just wants some help on maybe how he can rectify this, or maybe how he can still have a high bat.
Yeah, so he's self-diagnosed here, Gareth. He keeps getting out to Yorkers, so therefore his backlift is too high.
Yeah, that may or may not be the case, because obviously there's lots of reasons why you can get out to Yorkers. Yeah. It might be that the bat path isn't going straight enough to defend the stumps properly. But let's say that it is about it backswing, and he has correctly identified that, and it is in his words too high. I'll take us back to the Kevin Peterson course that we put together and is on our site, and KP talked very much about having a low set position with his hands, and then as he steps into the ball he would swing appropriately depending on what his intention was to do with that ball. And if you look at most of the great players around the world, it's a long time ago that Brian Lara was picking his bat up really high and being successful, and that worked for him. Yet most of the best players around the world presently hold their bat down pretty low, and then as they step to move into the ball, they step and swing, and that's the way that the body works. Action, reaction, one side of the body steps, the other side of the body swings the bat back, and depending on our intent, the different length of backswing or height of backswing will come into play. So if you're prodding forward to play against a spinner and the spinner's bowled it on a length, then generally the bat swing wouldn't go back in an exaggerated style. It would just do what it needs to do. And similarly, if you get a half volley outside off stump, as we step into it, we often step wider. And as we step wider, the hands go back because that's how the body works. And then we unleash our shot as a base on the back of that. So I thought Kev's advice was absolutely fantastic. You know, get your hands in the right place to start off with, and then let the body do what it's meant to do. And don't overswing the bat. We get our power from the ground upwards. We get our power from using our bodies, and our arms are a part of that, rather than actually exaggerating the swing. And it really annoys me when I hear coaches talking about get your hands back, get your hands back, get your hands back, because actually that's going to happen anyway if we just allow our bodies to do what it's made to do.
So if you had someone who you felt, oh, that back lift is getting a bit high, is it a matter of cueing them to keep it down a little bit more?
Yeah, I think it's their start position, mate, to be honest. So it's where their hands are when they're in their stance. And the people that generally have their backswing too high are the ones that start with their hands back. So you see a lot of people looking to try and clear their back pocket with their top hand. You know, we did on level 3 video archives, we went through thousands of deliveries of the best players in the world, and only one time could we find a side-on view of somebody that actually took their top hand back past their back pocket when they were playing any sort of shot. Yet a lot of coaches and a lot of coaching manuals in the past have talked about that being a key thing for success. Well, you know, it's not, is the bottom line. It only has to go back as far as it needs to be able to execute the shot. And just watching this morning, I only watched a bit bit of the England stuff, but I watched Jonathan Trott batting last night, you know, and he's, I think he's a really good example. If he has his hands in a nice comfortable position when he's waiting for the ball to come, he does his movements and then the ball comes down, and dependent on what he's going to do and depending on how his body moves, his backswing does whatever it needs to do to execute the shot. And actually that's the way that we are made. So I would just get them to get their hands in a nice appropriate position, which is about around the belt line or just below the belt line. And then let the body do what it's meant to do.
Yeah, that's interesting. It can be quite uncomfortable. I remember I went on a workshop a little while ago where it was a batting workshop, and I was unfortunate enough to be the coach in the group who was the one who was going to get the coaching. So I had to demonstrate my inferior batting technique, and the chap who was doing the coaching did mention to me that something about backlift, but when I tried to make that correction, when I tried to think about it, I felt all out of timing and all out of whack straight away. And I felt like my technique completely fell apart. So it's about getting the right cue to someone as well, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Gucci always talks about if you're going to bat for 6 hours, then you need to be comfortable, don't you? So there's no point in trying to force players to force their hands back, get your hands back, because our body naturally does that anyway as we move into the ball. So get people to just put their hands down just below the belt line and throw some balls at them and see how it all unwinds. And I should imagine it'll probably do what it's meant to do.
And just a little aside, how does that relate to if the backlift is not coming down straight? Say the backlift is going a little bit back behind the batsman's body. How would you cue that one up?
Well, I tell you a really good way of doing it, actually. You know, you get stumps which have got a base, and then you screw the stumps in, or you have some rubber stumps that go in the base. I'd leave the middle one out. And I would encourage the batter to, when they're swinging, to see how many times they can swing the bat backwards through between leg stump and off stump. And that's a really good way of aligning the bat, because they get that instant kinesthetic feedback. If they clang it into leg stump, and they know that they're coming behind themselves. If they clang it into off stump, and they know that it's going slightly too wide. So yeah, a really good indicator is that. And you know you could even put up a couple of bamboo sticks, couldn't you, to get your bat going back through, and then playing shots after that. So those have been two really good ways that I've helped, found have been useful in helping me to get people more aware of where their backswing is going.
Every week, one of the members of the team gets their chance to rant for 1 minute uninterrupted about pretty much anything they want, as long as it's got something to do with cricket. So Berners is in the chair this week. Time for your soapbox, Berners.
Not too much hot-headedness this week, but just something I've picked up from certainly amateur cricket, and that's it's all about communication. And certainly out in the middle, calling between the wickets, but not just that, sharing information. You know, when you're training, essentially you're only going to get better and to change things and also gain confidence from other people communicating with potentially what you're doing well or what you're doing badly. And cricket's one of those games, I think, that people kind of go through with a little bit of an individualistic approach, both in training and also at times during the game. So my gripe this week is share information and just get in each other's ear with more knowledge about what's going on. Help each other develop as players and also in game situations, you know, feed information back to each other and not being part of the game. It's just as important to let the guys know what the bowler's doing, what the pitch is doing, which fielders are weak, which fielders are strong. And of course, that all leads on to calling between the wicket, which is one of the biggest undermined things of the game, I think. Never practiced, never focused on, and can essentially win you games of cricket. So talk.
Okay, so that is the end of the show for this week. Before we go, before Gareth runs off to another exciting coaching session, he is going to decide on a winner of this week's competition, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So, of course, we had Wolf, the excellently named Wolf's question about bats. And we have Gurpreet's, also excellently named, but not quite so excellent as Wolf, question about bat lift. Which one did you prefer, Gareth?
I like Gurpreet's question today because, you know, the whole naturalness about getting your hands in the right place to swing your bat, I think, is really topical and really important. So I'm going to go with that one today.
Congratulations, Gurpreet. And if you are listening to the show and you're thinking, well, I want to send in a question, I want my question answered, and I also want to have that prize, which is tantalisingly close. Berners, what would someone need to do that?
They can give us a quick call, the number 020-88-167-691, or if you're on the interweb, it's coach@pitchvision.com.
It is. We use Twitter at PV Cricket Coach, and we also use Facebook. If you do a little search for Pitch Vision Academy on Facebook, you'll find us there. And speaking of searches, if you want to subscribe to the show, use iTunes and just search Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us in iTunes. If you want to use any other way to subscribe, then you can do so by heading over to pitchvision.com/academy. Click on the podcast link, and all the instructions and all the help is on there for you. And we do put this out every Friday, so you can have a treat at the end of your week. But that's all for this week. So until next time, we'll see you next week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Berners.
Cheers, coach. Have a good week.